Good day, everyone. Today on the Plant Remedy Revolution, we're speaking with Greg Tilford. Greg is a leading force and early pioneer of the pet supplements industry. He is the co-founder, formulating herbalist, and CEO for Animal Essentials Incorporated, a company that's been producing a full range of animal supplements for over 20 years. And as I started this recording, my dog Crosby came over and was asking to be pet, so he must know that something, an animal lover, is on the phone with me. So Greg has so many accomplishments. He really does. And his full bio is listed on the speaker page. I asked Greg to be represented in the Plant Remedy Revolution because he is so wise and has helped me so tremendously with my own pets over the years. Greg is the author of 5 books, but the one that really was so integral in helping me along the ways was the acclaimed Herbs for Pets, The Natural Way to Enhance Your Pet's Life. I actually had so much success with this book that I lent it to a friend and she never gave it back. So I've got to get a new one. So welcome to the show today, Greg. I'm really happy to have you here with us.
I'm happy to be here too. Thank you very much for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, it was, I felt like it was a no-brainer. We, so many of us have animals and pets that we love dearly. And, you know, we think about ourselves and, want to use natural herbal medicine to treat our ailments, if you will. And so why would our companion animals be any different, right?
Exactly. In fact, they're so big a part of our own healing. You know, everything is interrelated. They're really here for us, and we need to be there for them.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear all about what you're up to this year, and I want you to share that with our listeners. But I would like to just speak into the book that I mentioned. I mean, you have so many, but the Herbs for Pets. What was the inspiration on that? Was that your first book? I mean, I know you have other books, The Edible and Medicinal Plants of the West. From Earth to Herbalist, all sorts, but where did the inspiration for that one come from?
Well, everything kind of started in the same place. Back in 1989, it's hard for me to think back that far, I moved from Southern California into Montana, and it started kind of a journey back to Earth at that point. I lived off the grid for 11 years on a very remote mountain ridge in Montana, where I was learning about the edible and medicinal plants there, hence the books I've written. It started with the Eco-Herbalist Field Book and then the Edible and Medicinal Plants. But I realized in my studies there, I was sourcing plants for the human industry, the human nutraceuticals industry. It was wild harvesting and such. And I realized that in order to do that sustainably, I had to work in a more symbiotic fashion with the natural realm around me. So I spent a lot of time understanding the balances, the checks, the relationships, not just with the plants and the habitat they live in, but with the animals that also feed upon them and use them for medicine, and the exchange that occurs out there. And I realized, you know, what we've heard as herbalists all along is that we probably learn most of what we know about internal medicine through observation of animals. And that really came home to me there. I mean, it was not only obvious, but I realized that if we're going to take the whole concept of holistic, first of all, outside of ourselves and really make it holistic, we need to take into account the source of what we use and look at plants not just for exploitation of their chemistries, but understand their world. And the fact about their world is that the plants are here for everything, and they've been the primary medicine for animals ever since the beginning of really mammals on Earth. It's been their choice of medicine. So back then, I realized that nobody was doing anything on a commercial level for the animals. So in 1994, about the same time I started writing a lot of articles about my observations of herbs and animals and the work I was doing with friends that were using herbs and animals, I decided to start up a line of herbal extracts for animals by going through some holistic vets I knew around the country. And we called them and asked what they needed. And of course, the first thing that came up was, what can you do for all of these issues that we see that we believe from a holistic standpoint are relative to too much waste in the system, too much metabolic waste that isn't leaving the system quickly enough? Generally liver deficiencies, And, you know, in those kind of situations, whether they be humans or animals, we see situations like oily skin and dandruff and skin conditions, eczema.
Sure.
Later on, we'll see digestive issues. We'll see arthritis start developing from too much uric acid and various other components that aren't leaving the bloodstream, et cetera. So I came up with this formula that in humans would take like 3 months of just religious application. You'd have to use it 3 times a day, and you'd probably go 2 or 3 months before you really started seeing a result. And I went into that with the veterinarians I knew with a very skeptical attitude. I thought, you know, there's no way this is going to work because the vets are catering to clients that want to see results right away.
Mm.
And to try to go through the learning curve of thinking differently and looking at things from the bigger picture instead of, you know, stamping out the symptoms of disease, this just isn't going to work, you know. So I put it out there anyway, sent it out. It was called the detox formula, and it's still one of our best-selling formulas. But I got the first call back from one of the vets I sent it out to in a week, and they said, hey, we're seeing a result. We're seeing changes. We're seeing a better coat. We're seeing it's working. And frankly, I didn't believe them at all. I said, you know, that's impossible. There's no way this formula could work that fast. So I sent it out to more vets, and I started getting similar results back to the point where they actually said, you want us to send you some liver values and some tests to show that things are improving? Because they are. And so what I've learned since then is that one of the beauties of becoming the animal herbalist instead of just a human herbalist is I get to see medicinal plants work at their optimal best. There is no belief system. There is no baggage to go through. There's no prejudices, et cetera, that humans carry around. And we all know that where the mind goes, the body follows, right?
Yeah.
So when you put burdock root into a dog, for instance, to help confront a skin issue, and you see a result, there's not much argument there for a placebo effect. It either works
right,
or it doesn't. So it was extremely exciting. And since that day, I've been able to watch herbs work freely in these wonderful healers in and of themselves. It's their medicine, and they're just biologically and energetically set up to utilize these medicines very freely. And it's been just an absolutely wonderful experience.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And that's actually, I'm glad you brought up the lack of placebo effect, because that is something that really struck me when I was using some of the recommendations in your book to treat my dog. She had gone through some trauma when she was young, and so therefore she was very aggressive towards other dogs. But putting her on, you know, the protocol and the herbs that you recommended, and I think there were some flower essences, like she had no reason to think they would or wouldn't work, right? Like, they just did. And that's what made me such a huge believer. And I actually think, Greg, it was probably one of the formative moments of my own path, you know, as an herbalist and as someone who really trusted and believed in natural medicine, because it worked with my pet so well, right?
Absolutely. You know, we're hard students. I always apologize to my dog. You know, I say, Travi, his name is Travis, and I say, I'm sorry I'm such a hard student. I was hard with my last 3 other dogs. It's, you know, we've got this thick skull, and we think we know everything as humans. And the truth is that dogs and pets, they have this ability to reach through this racing analytical mind that we have and go straight into our heartstring to force us to think about what they need. And in finding what they need, we understand things about what's going on in our own life and our ability to provide for them, where the source of their foods and their medicines come from, the impact upon the environment. I mean, pets and dogs and cats and all these wonderful beings that we bring into our life are bringing so much more than just the joy of entertainment and having a clown in the house. I mean, they're practically raising our kids these days with values that we can't.
Right.
You know, muster ourselves, you know, unconditional love and selflessness, and the whole idea of hate is not even existent with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we put on top of that, you know, there's the science. There's an organization that I've aligned with just recently called HABRI. It's the Human Animal Bond Research Institute. And what they've done is they've connected the health benefits in a Western scientific perspective of just having a dog in the house, and they've shown through valid scientific studies what these animals can do just by their mere presence and the interaction and the human-animal bond. Autism spectrum disorder, allergies and immunity, child development issues. Mm-hmm. They promote healthy aging. They help with cardiovascular health and reduce, you know, our blood pressure and our risk of stroke and heart attack. They help with Alzheimer's patients and cognitive abilities. They help with cancer. They help with PTSD, mental health, you know, and general quality of life, workplace wellness. They do all of these amazing things for us. And when we take the time to understand that they're not human, they have different needs, and we have to really think about how their systems work to come up with the right herbal formulas for them, we start seeing things that relate to us, you know, and pretty soon we realize that we're not just working to heal the dog anymore. We're working to heal ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're working to bring a higher quality of life, not just to our animals, but into our household and as we share this knowledge and this information into the communities around us. So yeah. It's way bigger. I've realized that this is, in terms of holistic healing, this is huge.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm on your website right now, which is theanimalessentials.com, and I'm looking at some of your herbal tinctures formula. What what's the base for the tinctures?
We use vegetable glycerin. We use kosher vegetable glycerin, which, for those who aren't familiar with glycerates, they're challenging to make herbal extracts with. They're not as easy as using alcohol, but there's a saying I use often when I speak, and that is that a remedy or a medicine that cannot be applied is not a remedy or a medicine at all.
Right.
So dogs and cats, it's challenging to get something into their mouth, and vegetable glycerin has the same sweetness as similar to light corn syrup, so it's much easier to feed per se, much easier to get into the mouths of a dog. And cats are a different matter. You know, they don't taste sweet the way everything else does. But they are definitely sensitive to the effects, the hydrating effects of alcohol in their mouth. And as you know, if you like cats, they're all drama queens. So they're really hard to get herbal medicine into. So, you know, half the challenge of these tinctures that I produce is just getting it into them. The administration is the key component.
Yeah. And do you think that these are, I mean, clearly, I mean, you know, there's a reason why you're doing the tinctures, but I wonder why you don't do like a powder you would put on the food or something.
Right. We do some powders, and, you know, it really depends on the application. But the theory with liquids is when you're working with carnivores, there's a couple things that have to be considered in addition to palatability. One is the simple fact that they have very short digestive tracts. In the second part is they've got a lot of hydrochloric acid in their gut. So the whole idea is to get what can get into the intestine where these attributes, these constituents are absorbed. They need to get in quickly and they need to get in freely. And there's really no time or opportunity or for that matter, even the correct array of enzymes to break down the cellulose barriers of herbs and powders as effectively as an herbivore. So we want to put the active components of these herbs into the body as freely as we can, and hence liquids. It's just quicker to absorb and quicker to gauge and monitor, especially in the carnivores. You know, the herbivores are different. They metabolize things way better than we do, and they can utilize herbals much better than we do, which is one of the reasons why a proportionate dose for horses isn't measured in the gallons, it's still in the milliliters. It's much smaller than one would think because they're somewhat more efficient at utilizing it.
Right. Oh, that makes such sense. It really does. So you were telling me a bit about, so you're working on a new book right now, and you said your company is actually, you know, the whole Animal Essentials gang is working on, how did you put it, more helping people to understand the more holistic relationship that exists between humans and our companion animals. Can you just talk into that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everything, what I tell people about Animal Essentials and the success of our company is whatever successes we find are incidental to the cause of what we do. And basically what our mission is to improve and enhance the quality of life in companion animals, their people, and the communities they live in. So what we are working on doing is illuminating and understanding the human-animal bond and our commitment toward supporting that understanding, because it's within that understanding that we can reach into the hearts of these people and these wonderful people that love animals so that their heart can drive their mind in the right direction for the animals instead of being good consumers of just what they're told work best for their pets. The requirement really is to understand that individual pet and what the nuances are of that individual, because no two individuals are alike in any realm. So it sets the stage for people to really deepen their awareness and their bond with their animals, and also learn more about, in learning more about the natural needs of those animals, and you immediately identify some of the issues that relate to those needs. One of which is what I call the canary in the coal mine situation. And dogs, for instance, dogs and cats, they're all succumbing to the same chronic illnesses that we are. We're seeing increases with non-Hodgkin's type lymphoma. We see a lot of results coming out of the effects of endocrine disruptors like Roundup and all of the, you know, all of the terrible herbicides and pesticides that are so pervasive in the world. We're seeing our dogs develop cancers and tumors and issues, thyroid disease and, you know, chromosome damage and everything that we're suffering, but they're on a much faster life cycle. So it's really kind of, for humans that pay attention, we're kind of looking at a canary in a coal mine, except how many dogs or cats do we need to witness in the course of a life before we start understanding that, hey, we're dying of the same thing and we're causing it.
Yeah.
What can we do? What, you know, this has been brought to light through my little cat or my dog. What can I do to help correct and clean up my own life? And the answer is you change things from the inside out. You change things in the way you do things. You change what's underneath your kitchen sink. You change what's on your front lawn first. You change what you clean with in the house, out of respect and love of that animal. But you're really serving not just that animal, you're serving yourself, the house, and really the whole planet in the process. They're just amazing emissaries of nature. They stand between the rest of nature and humanity, and they bring nature into our homes.
They really do.
As soon as we understand that, and when we reach back to them and we give them back their medicine, what are we doing for ourselves? We're healing the human condition at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So my belief for our company is that I want to really inspire people through learning these things, and I want to educate people. I want people to feel comfortable coming to our website. It's always a work in progress, but really what I want it to be is a conduit of information so people can be empowered with knowledge and make their own decisions. And, you know, some will come back and buy products from Animal Essentials. That's fine, and some won't. It's their choice, but I want people to make an informed decision on behalf of those animals. That's the most important part.
That's lovely. That's lovely. So tell me, on this website, there's a picture of you with a horse. Do you still have that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that was Lacey. Lacey was kind of a foster horse for about a year, and she moved on to another home, and we did too. We couldn't stay at that property too long, so she was great. She was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
I
grew up with horses. My mom was really, really a huge fan of having a lot of pets around. So we had horses. We always had a dog. You know, I remember she let me take a couple kittens home from like a birthday party one time. We had fish and birds and bunnies. And yeah, she still is a huge animal lover. And it made me think about, just that relationship from a young age, being a child and having that connection with the animal world in such abundance. And, you know, it's shocking to me to realize that like some kids don't experience that. In fact, maybe most don't nowadays.
Right. I know. There is a disconnection, and there really shouldn't be. And when you look up this organization that I mentioned earlier, Habri.org, Habri.org, you'll see what they're doing and how special it is just from, you know, their work is very holistic, but they're using Western science to validate what they're doing. And I think if more people understood this from at least a value perspective, that, you know, Johnny doesn't just want a puppy. Johnny needs a puppy.
Yeah.
The household needs a puppy. We need to have animals in our life. We can't live as a separate entity upon the natural planet anymore. We need to do whatever we can to take a fundamental step back in toward that circle of life that we call nature. And I think it's very important to bring animals into our homes to accomplish that.
My son was a huge reason why we got our current dog. You know, we had dogs when they were little, but they both passed, and we were just in a really tiny apartment, and I was gone at work all day, and he really, really wanted a dog, and I was like, honey, you know, it's just not the right time because we're right on the road. The dog would be alone all day long. It just really didn't feel right or fair to the dog, but my son was so persistent, and so, and he, it wasn't like he was begging. He was just making really valid, grounded points constantly. You know,
right.
Like, well, you know, when we get a bigger place or something, we'll get an animal. He was like, yeah, but mom, I really want a dog while I'm still a kid. That's literally what he said, you know? Within the next year, we moved and we got our funky little Crosby.
They're all funky. They're all just so unique and so
oh,
different and so wonderful, you know, and yeah, they're hilarious. They're great.
Interesting. Maybe you have some insight into this, is that so my son was the main reason behind like getting the dog, loves him to death, everything, but for some reason Crosby is like the only bed he won't sleep in is my son.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah, they're funny. Yeah, I know. My dog insists on sleeping with me, too. And, you know, the cats will pile on top of my stepson. He'll just pile on top of Sam. But the dog usually sleeps with me and my wife. It's funny how they choose.
Yeah.
I've often wondered what goes on inside the mind of a dog, and a lot of people are writing about that and trying to speculate, but I think it's unique, different, and wonderful. I mean, imagine what our dog, how the dog looks out at the world as opposed to us. It's probably quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. For most people, maybe it's a bit of a stretch to consider that, right? We kind of put ourselves behind their eyes and imagine that right?
Right. Yeah, well, we're so busy as a species to try to impose our ideals, our ways, our thought process upon everything else. And, you know, we name them with our names. We dress them in our clothes sometimes. We relate to them as a part of the family. We talk about them like they're our children, but the truth is they're not, you know. And the value of realizing that combined with the love that we give to them is where the precious gifts really exist, because we're not taking care of a human child. We're taking care of something entirely different that requires different insight, you know. And those are good values. Those are wonderful things to teach children too, you know. How to think on behalf of an animal instead of just yourself is, you know, so they can survive and enjoy a quality of life that we do. And, you know, it's just really powerful stuff.
Well, it's very true. It is. I had this experience with Crosby the other day. He has a dog door in the house, so he can just go outside into a really large fenced-in yard anytime he wants. And he was barking quite a bit. I think there was like coyotes or owls one night. So I put something in front of the dog door so he would stop running out and barking. And the next day, I ran off to work and I forgot to move whatever I put in front of the dog door. So he was unfortunately locked inside all day, and he was, you know, he didn't have an accident or anything, but he wasn't mad at me, right? But it was there was this energy coming from him that was just incredulous almost, right? Like it was so interesting. He wasn't mad. And it wasn't until like, I was like, oh my God, buddy, I'm so sorry, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't until I really like sat next to him and really like one-on-one looked him in the eye, was like, buddy, I'm so sorry. Like that was, you know, just like really kind of like felt that with him, that his
right.
changed. He would come sleep with me again. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. They're masters at forgiveness. I mean, there's no doubt about that, especially dogs, you know, and selflessness and unconditional love. And you lock them in and, you know, that's okay, you know. It was hard, but that's okay. I'm glad to see you. I'm just happy to see you.
Yeah, totally.
I heard a joke recently that really kind of hit home on that line. It was, if you want to test and see what unconditional love is of a dog, try locking your dog and your wife in the trunk of your car for an hour and a half, and when you open it, see who's happy to see you.
Oh,
right?
God, that's so true. That is so funny. Yeah, oh, that's absolutely true. So this is going to be like a kind of a random, silly question, but why do dogs eat grass? Like, I feel like it's the simplest thing, and I should know this, but I don't.
Well, there's a few different reasons they eat grass. One is, first of all, they don't have the ability to break down cellulose or raw green herb materials very effectively. You'll notice
that when dogs eat
grass, oftentimes they'll throw it up, and it will be maybe half digested. Then if we don't clean it up, they often will eat it again. And oftentimes that is just an intuitive effort to break down what's needed in that grass more effectively. They have to eat it twice to get the constituents out, to break down the cellulose materials in that grass. The other reason they might eat grass is for just purely for cleansing purposes. I've witnessed animals at the end of a long, hard winter in Montana when the first grasses grow, they'll start eating everything, roughage, twigs, everything to cleanse their system after a long winter. You know, you've probably got parasite imbalances building up and such from the wrong foods. And oftentimes you'll observe animals in nature just cleansing with long fibers that aren't particularly nutritious. But I do think that dogs have a dual purpose there. So do cats. They need constituents. They need the chlorophyll. They need the silica. They need a lot of different things that might be contained within that grass. But they can't get it effectively the first time they eat it. So they'll eat it a couple times.
And in the wild, do you think canines would eat like medicinal mushrooms?
I've actually seen them eat medicinal mushrooms, and I've seen everything. Well, first of all, just about every mushroom out there has got a medicinal property to it. I mean, even the poisonous ones have medicinal attributes to them. And even the benign little brown ones that grow underneath pine trees in the forest have constituents that have been shown to be useful against, you know, blood sugar disorders and ranging just across the board. Mushrooms are amazing. And I've seen coyotes eat wild mushrooms. I've seen deer and elk. I've seen bear eat mushrooms. I think it's pretty common forage for them. Absolutely.
Yeah. So fascinating. It really would be something to just like follow. I mean, it sounds like maybe you had. You said you saw a coyote eat these. I was thinking like, oh, how great it would be to follow a canine around.
No, I've seen coyotes eat things. I've seen mountain lions that, you know, they'll roll around in patches of wild valerian. Just like a big house cat, you know. Bears, you know, a lot of the Native American medicines, the First Nations people, herbs like Osha were named after the bear and observations of the bear utilizing that plant for medicinal purposes and such. And it is fascinating. And there's an entire science called zoo pharmacognosy that studies not just how animals utilize plants and utilize different attributes of nature for medicine, but it's shown that they know exactly what to pick, when to pick it, how much to take, and when to discontinue their dose. It's just amazing.
It's fascinating.
Have that built right in. So you can understand the value of, you know, just use your imagination for a second and think about early tribes sending out a young man or woman for the course of a lifetime just to observe the animals to try to understand what the medicines are in nature around you. And I can see, you know, that probably took hundreds if not thousands of years to develop these medicines. And I'm sure there were probably some poisonings along the way. You know, birds, for example, can metabolize cyanide and cyanic acid different ways than us. So if you're learning how to eat berries by following the birds around, you're probably going to get sick at some point.
Right.
You know, but it is amazing what they are capable of selecting and using.
That's fascinating. And also just got this hit about like how fast our world goes nowadays. Like, could you imagine if like that was part of our culture still, where there was more people. I mean, I know that some people still head out to the Amazon and you know, look for new herbs and discover things. But yeah, it's just there's not the same place for it anymore, you know?
No, no. And the sad reality of that is that, you know, we're losing medicinal plants in nature faster than we can discover them now, you know, and I'm headed tomorrow, actually, after this call, or probably at the time this airs, I'll be down in Panama. And one of the fascinating things in Panama is the Darien Gap, which is the south end of Panama. The jungle is so severe that humanity has not been able to punch a road through it yet. It's one of the only places on Earth where we haven't been able to pass. And it's just solid, aboriginal, undiscovered jungle, you know.
Wow.
Heaven knows what kind of medicines are sitting in that jungle just lurking. And the question in my mind is, you know, it's locked away from us for a reason. Maybe it's just not there for us, or it's not our time. We don't deserve that yet. We need to understand how to be better stewards, I think.
That's a really, really good point. Is that what you're going down there to do, is to discover the medicines?
Yeah, that, and I've started kind of a global outreach project. I was in Guatemala and Antigua recently, where I did some benefit work. I did a lecture for a organization called the Street Dogs of Antigua, and basically what I did down there is there are select herbs that have been just kind of carried around by humans all over the world since the beginning of humanity. And you know, there's dandelions that came from Europe or Asia, and they've marched their way across the United States, for instance. And you know, plantago species, the white man's footprint that grows in the middle of trails, marched its way from the East Coast settlements of the U.S. into the West because of the Anglo travelers that carried along. And so when I get into these environments, first I'm kind of looking at animal wellness and doing what I can to have a global outreach. I believe that animals don't have boundaries, first of all, and there's something to learn from all these different cultures. And when I'm down there, like I was in Guatemala, I'll be teaching people in animal rescue and in clinics how to utilize the plants that are familiar to me that are available for everybody. And a lot of these are, you know, the weeds, so to speak, that have been carried all over the place, like bamboo.
Right.
You know, bamboo grows all over the world, and it has really good skin clearing properties and various digestive attributes and such. And so the idea is to not just learn, but to help educate people on how to utilize what's at their feet. And I also find my travel is very instrumental in my writing right now. It gives me an opportunity to be in a pristine environment that's very, you know, inspiring and quiet. And I'm writing a new book right now, so I'll be doing a lot of writing down there too.
That's so true. Like, getting out of your daily routine is so instrumental in being able to write sometimes.
Yeah, some people can do it, you know, but I can't. If I'm going to write, I've got to just focus on nothing but. That's what I do.
Yeah, for me, it's like there's just too many distractions sometimes. I'm like, oh, well, I'll just go for a quick walk, or, oh, I should go do the laundry or something. Yeah.
Yep.
Does your new book have a name yet?
It does. I was just thinking, should I tell you now or not? It's kind of taboo to do that. Oh,
yeah,
yes, you
really don't have to.
It's called Earth, Herbs, and Animal Wellness.
Oh, perfect.
And I anticipate it will launch with a fairly robust lecture circuit tour next year.
Awesome.
And it will certainly explore all those aspects. I mean, how the earth, the herbs, and animal wellness are all connected and we're part of. And, you know, I won't give up anymore.
That's beautiful. Greg, do you think you'll make it up here to Vermont?
I hope so. I love Vermont.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Try to come in the fall.
Absolutely love Vermont. That would be good. Yeah, I want to get on to the East Coast sometime in the next, after the snow's not blowing anymore, of course.
Right, exactly.
But, yeah, I definitely want to get up there soon, and I'm certain I'll be there when the book launches.
Oh, excellent. Well, I'll have to keep tabs on you then, and, Yeah, just one more time so our listeners will have this information. Greg Tilford's website is animalessentials.com. You can find all sorts of information, not just on his pet care supplements, but about the mission, the company, his philosophy. And then the other website that Greg was talking about is called HABRI, H-A-B-R-I, Human Animal Bond Research Institute. I was just kind of tooling around on here a little bit as we were talking, and there's so much great information here. So thank you for that nod.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. And I'll just say, let our listeners know that you were very generous to offer everyone 30% off all items at Animal Essentials from a coupon code that they will have in their daily email that goes out with the link to this particular recording. And thanks so much, Greg. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you're up to.
Thank you for having me on.